CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. We're coming to you live this morning from the studios in Rivonia, from my house and from Lebang's house, and most especially from wherever you are this morning. That's what's happening. That's where it all goes down. And it is live. It is 6 o'clock. It is the first day of a brand new month and a brand new season. And we're heading into the best time of year. Very exciting stuff. Let's do this. Let's join hands and stand in a circle and, you know, like hop and skip and jump. Ring a ring of roses. All right. What's happening, peoples? By the way, Bulelo and Lebang are stars of the show this morning. What's going down, peoples? What's happening?
I don't know if it's me, but like, is this like the spring day vibe that we get every year, or is there something not in the air this time around?
Well, I mean, ask Bulelo. He was going on about spring day yesterday and the day before, actually. So, I mean, is it everything you wanted it to be, Bulelo?
Well, like I told you, people are ready. I had
give it a chance
this weekend. Plus, there's no Premier League this weekend, so it's excellent. Everyone with a pool. I've got two dream invites for this weekend. I will certainly be spending Saturday around an incredible pool with a below the ground jacuzzi. Cannot wait. Ooh. Cannot wait.
Ooh. That sounds.
That sounds nice.
That, what a below the ground jacuzzi. Is that?
Yeah, who are your friends?
No, above ground, common. I'm not coming to your party.
Oh, sorry, I see what you... Yes, you actually...
We've been here.
Yeah, you've been over this territory with us before. So
no LARPers where I'm going this weekend.
So you don't mind a jacuzzi. It's just that if it's below the ground, it's acceptable. If it's above the ground, it's not.
We're not in university anymore. Like, if I'm coming to your house and you have a jacuzzi, let's do it properly. You own the house. You know, we're not coming there to wreck your house. We're coming there to have a good time. You intend to live here. Yeah.
Wow, you are something else. All right.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, all I can say is that I was in, yesterday was a crazy day. We did the show and then I went through to the office. We had a really big presentation to one of our clients for an hour. Then I went and did... I don't want to spoil this by letting the cat out of the bag. Lebang was there too, but we did a pretty big interview with a really significant person.
Who's an
important person.
Powerhouse.
Absolutely. And even though I'm going to say they, I don't want to give anything away because we're going to do a big launch for this, but even though they didn't make a big fuss of themselves and they never have, they're a pretty big deal. Big deal family, big deal relationships, big deal personal contribution to the world. You know, these are the kinds of interviews that I love to do, and they don't come along all that often, but we had a big one to get done. Then I went to lunch with my business partner because we had to spend some time catching up on all the stuff. Because, you know, with not going to the office every day, and I don't know if you're back to 100% normality in your business or what you're up to, we don't see each other as much, so we don't actually sit and catch up on the little things. We make sure that we're on top of the big things, but you don't actually sit down with someone and find out about what's going on in their family. And, you know, even though we've got the top line stuff kind of seen to, it's really important to actually just spend a little bit of that glue time, as she calls it. And I think what she means is the, you know, between the bricks, you've got the concrete, you've got the glue. That's what holds it all together. And if you don't make time for that stuff, you're always talking about business and you don't really connect properly. So that was a really brilliant way to spend the day. And then I came back home and of all the things I had to do last night, I had to sit in a like homeowner's AGM. But luckily it was a virtual one. So, you know, I could eat my supper while the meeting was going on. And I mean, I listened to my own. I couldn't believe it. I was in disbelief that I'd actually sat through the whole thing. But I listened to it and it was quicker because you didn't have all those people. Excuse me, I just want to raise a point of order or whatever. You know, there was those people in a meeting. It's like Parliament. So it actually went pretty well. And I think we should always do our meetings this way. You'd have more people attend. They vote quickly. because you vote in this online system. It was actually pretty awesome. I've never seen one of these before, and I thought I'd seen it all. I thought I'd seen Microsoft Teams, Zoom, Google Meets, what are all the others? All the thousands of apps that you get. You know, this was a new one where you actually could vote on the system as well. Now, I mean, if we did that for Parliament, these guys could be paid half of what they get paid. They wouldn't have to dress up. They wouldn't have to fall asleep. We wouldn't know if they were falling asleep because you wouldn't always have the camera on them. And they could just take part and do the things they needed to do. As you've often said, Bulelo, like efficient and bureaucratic rather than like just attention seeking and political. So I did that. And then I got some pretty awful news about a friend of mine after the meeting, and I thought, ugh, well, this is all I need, like the last sort of thing to kill the day. But it was a busy, busy day, and I woke up this morning, I'm like, wow, I hope I have a day like that today. Because I like being busy. I don't like the bad news part of it or the homeowners association meeting. I can do without that. But it's nice to be busy. It feels good to be busy. I hate this malaise that so many people have sunk into where they're like, they do half of what they did before. It's nice to be like really, really chock full on a day like that. And to finish August with, you know, a lot on the plate.
And to finish strong as well. Like, since we've been back at home or working from home and only really coming into the office here and there, it's difficult to really get into that work mode 24/7. But ironically, when you get so much more done at home, it just feels like I'm definitely accomplishing something. Whereas, I don't know, but when I'm in the office now, it just feels like a bit of a turn up. Like, I can't just sit and be like, boom, I'm working. There's so much going on because we're so excited to be around people that we kind of forget to work sometimes. But when you're at home, you're working. When you've got appointments, you're out there, you're busy, you're doing what you need to do. Same thing, Gareth. Yesterday, I got home and I was like, phew, I literally got back at like 10 p.m. It was a chock-a-block day, but it felt so good. You know, I was like, yes, these are the kinds of days I want to wake up for. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, I think we...
Yeah.
You agree with this, Mbulelo. Obviously, you're a high output kind of guy.
Eudaimonia is a very douchebaggy term for what you're talking about there. It's not like exhausted. It's like you feel so accomplished. You know, there's a different type of exhausted. Mm. And eudaimonia is when not only do you put it all in, but you feel that sense of accomplishment internally without somebody going, oh, you're brilliant. You know, eudaimonia.
And there's something about going to sleep, falling asleep immediately because you've done a lot and you actually need the sleep. And there's none of that like, let me lie in bed for an hour and scroll through social media, or let me turn on the TV and watch some bullshit. You just fall asleep because you're busy and you're tired and you've had a crazy day and you need the sleep. And you sleep properly, man. You sleep hard. You go straight to sleep. No messing around.
And unless you've got a kid who decides that you're not getting any sleep at all. Oh. Like, I'm literally running on like 3 hours. I thought I had this on lock because I took my daughters to my mom's place yesterday. So they were running around all day, literally living their best lives. By the time I fetched them, they were tired, like gack tired. So I'm like, score, get home, put them in the bath, put them in the bed, and they're out. That was the plan. And then I went to bed eventually. And I kid you not, at like 2 a.m., my one daughter's like, knock, knock, wakey, wakey, lady. Right. I need some entertainment because she had slept, you know, earlier than she usually does. Oh, no. Guys, last night was a battle between me and her. I realized that I serve her. I am her servant.
You're
whatever
a servant.
She wants, she gets.
You're a servant. I mean,
listen, it's funny you say that. I really am.
It's funny you say that. One of our clients, incredibly dynamic guy, he's one of my favorites. He's here every Tuesday.
Oh, Yaku.
And it's
Yaku,
just, it's an electric factory when he comes in here. And he was yesterday saying he has made it clear to his father and his family that they work for him. They chose to have him. And the way he describes it is exactly what you're saying now, is your daughter starts to figure out, you work for me. And this employment contract is at the very least for the rest of your life.
Pretty much. Like, you made your bed, now sleep in it. Like, that's it.
Oof. Or don't sleep in it.
I wish I could sleep in it.
Yeah. You know, let's not say a servant. You're not the servant to your daughter here in this case, but you are in service to her, whether you like it or not.
Forever.
Because, I mean, you know, any good, healthy relationship means you're the authority figure in the parent-child situation, but you are in service, whether you like it or not.
Yeah. Thank you for fluffing it up for me. That's what I'll call it from now on. Yeah. But we know what it is.
I know. It just sounds sounds a little more a little more kosher when you say it that way.
Yeah.
Anyway, so with this this VIP that we interviewed yesterday, I actually meant to ask if they could do a photograph with you, Lebang. And I was saying to Rina at lunch, damn, I should have asked, because she said, yes, you should have. Because
I wanted to ask.
You were so polite, and I thought, I'm sure that Lebang wants a picture. And I wish I could. Oh. I wish I could just draw. We'll pick up again. So don't worry. We'll definitely do something again. But I suddenly thought leaving there, I was like, there's something we forgot to do here yesterday, because it's a nice thing you know. You seemed a little bit like you were very relaxed and very composed, but I could tell that you were also a little bit starstruck.
A little bit, bro. It was so obvious. I was like halfway shaking off the time. Like when I had to like mic her, I was like, can I please? And then like while we're sitting there, like, and she was talking to us, and I was just like looking at this woman and like the wonders that were coming out of her mouth. I'm like, how am I going to get a picture out of this? I'm like, maybe it's going to be a bit unprofessional because we're obviously here for work.
Yeah.
Like, am I going to come off as like a groupie, or should I just like, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to do. I really wanted a picture. I was like, I want to go home and show my mom. But then I was like, you know what? Let me just like hold back, because being starstruck is just like, it's hard because you kind of freeze up. I got guababa. There's a thing called guababa.
Guababa.
You're just like, yes, so you don't know what to say. You're just like, did I want to? And you just don't know. I was just like, you know what, man, I'm just going to let this slide. The day will come again, and then I'll take the picture. I really want to
know. No, it will come again, but I felt really bad when we were sitting talking about it, and I suddenly thought this would have been a nice thing, because also, you don't ask, you don't get. And there's no way they would there's no way they would have said no. In fact, I remember
the
first person who told me, if you don't ask, you don't get, is somebody who has really done well in life. He's got lots and lots of money. He's got a really, really amazing career, like achievements. The CV's as long as, you know, from here to the end of the 100-meter racetrack. He's just a winner in every way. And I thought, when it came from him, I was like, this guy knows what he's talking about. Write that down in the inside of your skull and just keep an eye. Because if you don't ask, you don't get. It sounds so obvious. Most people don't get what they want in life because they don't ask for things. And I'm not saying in terms of just people. If you meet people and you want an autograph, or you meet people and you want to pitch them a business idea, of course that's the most literal way to interpret if you don't ask, you don't get. But there's also something else. There's another way to do it. It is to remember that what you put out into the universe is what you're going to get back. So if you wander through life and you don't have a list of short-term and medium-term and long-term goals, and I know this is getting into the territory that motivational speakers usually occupy, so I'm careful when I go here, but if you are wandering through life and you don't really know what it is that you want, but you know you're unhappy, nothing's going to improve. I'll never forget when my brother got back from, he did a sabbatical in the U.S., and he was working in Florida, and he had a really good time while he was there. He's in Miami, and he just loved it. And he got back to South Africa, and he was, for about 9 months, he struggled to find a job. And it wasn't because there weren't a lot of people that would have hired him, or that he didn't have the qualifications, or that there weren't jobs available. It was that he didn't know what job he wanted. And if you don't put it out there, if you don't ask, then you don't get. Because unless you have a list of, like, these are the things I want from a job. I want it to be stimulating. I want to be challenged every day. I want to do something that I enjoy doing, that I'm good at. I want to work with people who are smarter than me. I want to be able to take 2 holidays a year or 3 holidays a year or whatever. If you don't write those things down and start to condition your mind to pick up on what the things are that you're looking for, then either everything that comes your way is going to be bad, or nothing that comes your way is going to be good. And then you only have yourself to blame. So I see a lot of people with self-inflicted problems in their lives, and pain and unhappiness and misery and, you know, just a general kind of dissatisfaction with being alive. And I often, not always the case, there's some people who just really have bad luck, or they are, you know, they're just those people who, for whatever reason, things just never seem to work out for them properly, no matter how much effort they put into it. There are those people. I don't know what their lesson is to learn. I'm not sure what they're here for on earth, because it must be frustrating as hell. And I wouldn't last very long in that kind of situation. But a lot of it is self-inflicted. And if you're just wandering blind through life, hoping good things happen to you, that's a fool's errand. That's a stupid
vision
race.
Boards.
Yeah, I mean, it is, I suppose, you know. And again, I don't want to stray into the territory that motivational speakers occupy, because they're better at that than me. And in some ways, they're more irritating than I could ever try to be. But I will say that, but you have to have a plan. If you don't have a plan... Yeah. Nothing's going to make sense. If you don't have a roadmap, anywhere you end up is a good enough destination.
So listen, it's important to know what level you want to play at, right? And it's not just about money. If you want your life to be of quality, you must have goals. It's non-negotiable. Now, you can go around bumbling about and maybe 1% have it good. But it's so interesting that you're saying this. So last weekend, the kindest person I know, we've been friends for 29 years now. And so she's a high-end lawyer, works in mining, and she is a dynamo. They know when she walks in there, stuff happens across the continent. But in her personal life, she's unable to do exactly what you said. And we're polar opposites, right? So she wants to be nice to everyone and do everything for everyone, where I'm like, I'll do what I want. And you know, so we do complement each other quite well. And I had to have a hard word with her, and I said, listen here, let me tell you something. What you need to understand is, when you do goals for yourself, is everybody's brilliant at telling you what they want. I want this, I want that, I want that. But what goals actually do, just for my personal experience, is the most difficult thing in the world for people is to hear the word no. But the other thing it does for you is that it tells you what you will not accept.
Right.
Because everybody's brilliant at, I know what I want.
Good, good.
Like, we've been practicing... But you must know what you will not. It is not, I mean, boundaries is what Dr. Hanan called it. But there has to be clear lines what you will not accept. Quality of people, quality of food, lack of it, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
You need to be clear about
that.
So,
I know you're not making that up, because I tease you a lot about it. But for example, you won't drink a cup of Recoffee. Yeah, you know, God bless them. I'm not going at Recoffee here. But if I put that in front of you, you would rather not have coffee that day than drink that stuff.
But that's not coffee.
No, I know. You know, Mbulelo will say many worse things about it. But, you know, one of these days, maybe they're paying us for advertising. I don't want to nail them. But the fact is that no matter how much they pay to be on the show, Mbulelo will never drink this stuff. And I know that for a fact. So he has certain lines you can't cross. And even though you sometimes sound a bit douchey about these things, at least we know with you that when you really do like something, you're not bullshitting. And when you don't like something, then there's no wiggle room here with you. In some ways, it's easier to work with someone like you. And I suppose it must be frustrating to some people, but I kind of like it, because you know where the lines are. And there's none of that like peer pressure stuff. Like, there's this one friend of mine who's, you know, God bless him, he's always trying to like persuade me that this is a good thing to do, or that that's a more interesting way to approach things. And I have to keep reiterating to him, like, I'm not really in any way susceptible to peer pressure. Like, it just doesn't happen in my life. No one ever persuaded me to smoke or drink or do any of the things that supposedly would have made me cooler at high school. I knew I wasn't very cool at high school, but I liked me a lot more than I liked being cool. And Bolelo's a bit like that too. That's a rare thing to have instilled in you. And if you have it, good, great for you. I mean, you know, you're not going to make everyone else happy all the time, but you'll be happy.
And that's all that matters.
Make people happy.
No, no.
I wish more people could hear this. It is not your job. It's why I hate when people go, find somebody who completes you. It is not your job to make other people happy. It is everyone's job to make themselves happy. But sorry, Lebang, I cut you off there.
Go ahead. I was saying, like, a lot of times people like you are easily misunderstood because you don't automatically come across as, you know, the easy to talk to, I'm here to make everybody happy kind of person. And isn't, you know, to a certain extent, isn't it just easier to know yourself so much because then you know what you don't want, you know what you're not willing to tolerate. And I just think that's such it's a nice outlook on life. Even though it's easily misunderstood, you don't care about how it's misunderstood because you know who you are and you're just happy to move with it. And it's refreshing. I always say to people that, you know, I like AKA because he's very clearly a douchebag. He's been consistently an asshole and he hasn't changed his stance on that for the 15 years that he's been making music. And we can't be mad at him because he knows who he is. He's been clear about that. You know, he hasn't switched up on us. Whereas, you know, other people as an artist, you know, you want to obviously make everyone happy.
I mean, everyone's talking about Kanye West and Donda now, right? And that's the same sort of thing. Like if you're a Kanye West fan, you'll put up with whatever bullshit he throws at you. But if you don't like him, there's no song that he could write that's going to win you over. I almost feel like there's an authenticity to that, which costs you a lot of money. It costs you social points, certainly. This is where Mbulelo's thing about being liked comes into it. And remember, Mbulelo, it's easy for you to say it's not your job to make people like you, or it's not your job to become popular because it's not up to you. But the reality is so many people just crave that every day. Hey, they wake up and they go, I just wish people loved me. You cannot be... this is your choice in life, one of the many. I'm not going to lay this down as number one. But you have this, every one of us have this choice in our direct path, no matter what age you are, no matter what kind of a life you lead, no matter who's important to you and who isn't, what you have and what you don't have. This is one of the most fundamental choices you have. Either you can be a people pleaser and you can try to make yourself popular with other people, and you can try to make yourself one of those people who everybody likes, or you can be authentic, but you cannot be both. There are very few people. If you are, then it's by fluke. It's like, you know, you lucked out. Like the stars aligned, because the things that make you authentic are also the things that people like. Very rare situation.
Yeah.
Because most people are not, they're not like that, you know.
You've nailed it. And, you know, I wish I could take all the credit because I do like taking credit for stuff I do, but I was raised, but I was raised by a father who was obsessed with quality. Right. And my father has like, he's a very simple guy. So chemical engineer, very, very simple. He doesn't like fluff and all of that he's very simple. He always used to say to us is, I don't like to make a lot of rules. Right. What I do is I make few rules, quality rules. It's all about the quality of what the rules are, because he says, and this is why it's important to write things down and have what my father calls core principles.
Right.
I'm not interested in how I make you feel. Is am I acting to my family's core principles? That's always what I go back to, you know. And I'm not perfect. Nobody's perfect.
No,
but I always revert back to my. So I'm not looking for affirmation from the outside. And I, you know what you're saying, Gareth, is so close to my heart because my friend's going through this, and I always say to her, what are your core principles? And I asked her, just write down 5 core principles that are important to you.
Sure.
And it's been sort of 6 weeks and she hasn't come back to me.
I mean, it's like, you know, someone, everybody has this experience too. And I know we're being very philosophical this morning. Ruth says, wow, you guys are so philosophical. I love it. Well, I'm glad you do, Ruth. I hope everybody else does. But at least none of us are sitting here this morning talking bullshit to each other. You know, I would hate us to be sitting here just going on about our favorite colors for 6 hours. That would be the most horrible thing we could do to you, and I don't think you'd stick around for it if you listen to the show. But this whole thing about core principles makes me think of something else. I started this conference that we had yesterday with a client of ours, because when people introduce you as a speaker at these things, they have to have a biography, right? And that's bad enough because that's someone else describing you, and at least if they don't hit all the spots and you don't feel great about that intro, it's how someone else sees you, so you accept it for whatever it's worth.
For sure.
But you have to, everyone has to write their own biography on social media these days. I mean, you have to have a Twitter bio, right? You have to have an Instagram bio. You have to have some kind of description of yourself that exists on the internet. If you have a Wikipedia page, then that's something someone else has decided to write about you. And that's hard. Like, just writing your own bio is so hard. Some people try to make it funny. Like, I've never really written a serious bio, whether it's long or short, for myself. I can't. I can't take myself seriously enough. But for some people, that's a really difficult task. And when Bulelo says, write down your core principles. Jeez, that is difficult stuff.
Dude.
Like, for many of
us, it's almost like
we're still doing some sort of self-introspection.
It's too much.
Yeah, we're still working that out.
Exactly.
Bulelo, that's hard, man. Like, what do you think yours are? I mean, you've seemed to have worked it out. I don't know what mine are.
Teach us, sensei.
No, I have not worked it out, and I'm constantly speaking to wiser people. But I mean, I'm not going to bore you with the full list of five. But my number one core principle, because I just want to say as well, you know who needs it more and more is the more competent you are, the more you actually need core principles. Is because I know what type of person I am. In my 20s, I do have an ego, so I need to manage myself. Again, it's not about the other people. Is you know, when you start to feel yourself, is in my 20s, I went away from my family's core principles and I was a delinquent, an absolute mess of a human being and a terror for society. And I was the problem. And you know, so for me, my number one core principle, right? Number one is non-negotiable wherever I go. Is wherever I go, I don't care about being the smartest person there, but I will be the hardest working person there. Like, that is always my core principle. It doesn't matter where I go. And over the last 6 years, I'm proud to say every space I've been in, I believe I've been the hardest working person there, whether true or not, to my standard. So that is my number one core principle. I mean, I've got a few others, but these things are so important. And I just wanted to finish off on where my thinking comes from. Is my father used to say, not too many rules, because if you have too many rules, the problem is you have to stick to them.
Yeah.
That's the problem with too many rules. And then you lose quality. With quantity, you lose quality. So it's tricky. I'm always talking to wise people. I have people that I call mentors. So and they keep asking me for this stuff. One in particular who's known me since I was in the testicle. You know, he keeps pushing me for this kind of stuff. My father's testicles.
On a totally unrelated but still motivational note, Snae Zulu says, morning, guys. I need a dose of Lebang's positive energy right now. I got scammed out of 2,500 rand a few days ago, and I just missed my 6 a.m. flight this morning. I'm happy to listen live. So, Lebang, any advice for Snae?
Snae, first of all, I'm so sorry. That can't be easy. Shit. But on the bright side, it's spring, apparently. It's the 1st of September. Secondly, that 2.5, Lord knows what you're going to do with it. It's gone. Just get it out. You're going to make triple that in the near future. Everything happens for a reason. If you got on that 6 a.m. flight, Lord knows what would have happened. Thank you, guys. Lord knows what would have happened if you had got on that flight. Maybe you would have gotten to your destination and got into the wrong taxi. Everything happens for a reason. So be still, be
all right
with where you are and what you've experienced, because you need this information now. So in the future, you can look back and say, I'm glad I got scammed at 2.5 so that I don't get scammed at 7.5 or that 27.5 in the future. And you'll be fine, girl. Just brush it off and keep it moving. You got this. You got this.
Nice. You see, you're good at this stuff. We're going to make you do this once a week, I think.
Yeah, you guys should. You should.
I got an email yesterday after we had Michael Flax on yesterday on the show, and this is from Bronwyn. She says, I loved the email from Adele regarding Markel Flax. I just had to put it out there. The doom and gloom Mbulelo is my favorite. Okay, so you see, Mbulelo, it's not just people who – they like your realism and your pragmatism and your cynicism. Calls a spade, and his no-bullshit approach is so refreshing in a world full of Kardashians. You rock, Mbulelo. And Mbulelo, another request from Bronwyn to get your mother on the show, please. She sounds like one hell of a lady. Well, we've heard she's never going to do it. But, you know,
a firecracker.
There's some people who just will not Trust me, I've tried. There are a couple of people who I've thought, wow, this person would be so interesting to have on the show. Just no interest at all. And I mean, it might even be the same kind of person that we're talking about here. I'm like Jamie, who says, I don't write or do anything for social media or for the public. It's a good way to tell if someone really knows you. I've never been on LinkedIn or Facebook for that matter. Well, we're honored to have you on here, Jamie, because it sounds like you're very choosy about where you put yourself. So that's good. Okay, we got to get to some headlines. Let's take a quick look at what's going on in the world this morning, just to keep us on top of things. So first of all, Jacob Zuma has refused examination by the NPA's medical team. This guy is just not cooperating. He's like a hippopotamus or a rhinoceros that's wallowing in the water or stuck in a corner, and he's just not budging. And we're not going to get anything we want out of him. And I think that the court proceedings must just continue without him then. You know, when you make yourself an obstacle, and really, I don't care if Jacob Zuma is well or not. I don't care if he's personally in attendance or not. It's not the NPA's job to do more than is humanly possible to get someone to cooperate. They must just move ahead now. And if that means that he spends more time in jail for contempt of court because he refuses to budge, tough. Time is up. If he's not going to meet us halfway as someone who presided over a collapse in our state and who willfully engineered a collapse in our state in some ways, then I think a lot of people's patience with this guy is just running out. And I don't think I'm the only one who's thinking or saying that at the moment. Just who cares? Like, now we've got to move on without you. Right?
Weren't they asking for donations like 2 minutes ago?
Oh, yeah.
For his legal... Mm-hmm. Come on, bro. So come on, bro.
It's fine for him to ask for money, which he seems really good at, and he seems to run out of money really well because he's very poor at managing it. But, you know, when we need him to do something for... Remember, this is not Cyril Ramaphosa's justice machine, and it's not... A certain part of the electorate's justice machine or the ANC's justice machine. This is the people of South Africa who are represented by our legal system. And our legal system has courts, and those courts, if we don't all agree that we're going to comply with the rules of a court, then we have no place living in a lawful society. And this guy is being objectionable and obfuscatory. And it's time for him to now pay a price for that, by being declared unnecessary, deemed unnecessary as a present human being in his own trial. Let's just move ahead without him, and we can try him in absentia. They've done this before; it wouldn't be the first time. We can't keep on massaging this guy just to get one or two little concessions out of him. And if he's got so much, you know, so many secrets, so many Smolanyana skeletons, bring it then. How about? Yeah, we're calling you on your promises now. There is no more time for you to hide away with your cards. Like, lay it out there. We've called you on it. Show your cards. Otherwise, shut up. No one cares. Basitsana saying it's the same guy who asks for donations. Hi, Futsek.
Hi.
No, so there we go. Lots of that Cross stuff it. Going on. Absolutely. So that's the first story in the news. The DA has called on the presidency to release the outcome of Kusela Diko's disciplinary process. And of course, she was the woman who was the president's spokesperson for some time. And we're trying to figure out exactly what happened there, because the president's spokesperson was implicated in a whole fraud and corruption situation with tenders around PPE for coronavirus. And they're not telling us what actually happened. They haven't given us the outcome of the disciplinary process. So what's the point then of having a disciplinary process if you can't tell the public what happened in the process? It's not good enough for you to say, well, we've had a process. Like, you owe us an explanation, just like Jacob Zuma owes the court an explanation. So again, do your job.
But you know the script. You know the ANC script. We will... Feather go internal investigations once we have decided.
Yeah.
Once we have exercised and indeed exhausted all of the options of the African National Congress, we will revert to the nation, black, blue, pink,
Boring.
I will once again be Nelson Mandela's. Right. I mean, these clowns.
I don't know if you ever watched the horror movie Candyman. It's this, the idea with Candyman, if you ever saw it, was that you say Candyman, like, I think it's 5 times, and then the Candyman appears and murders you. Yes. So this is...
Yeah. Lucilo.
Lucilo, remember. Lucilo. Same thing. I remember that.
Look at y'all.
I was obsessed with that show when I was a kid.
I was terrified.
But what a dumb premise, really, for horror, because even though they've re-released it, apparently the Candyman director has just made history by becoming the first black woman to have a film open at number one in the North American box office chart. And what they've done is they've redone the original from so many years ago. The dumb idea, the thing I can't get about this movie is, if saying Candyman 5 times is what's going to make this person, this monster, this creature appear and murder you, then the premise of the movie is just don't say Candyman 5 times. Stop at 3 and boom, we don't have a movie. There's no horror, right? Sounds so obvious. Just don't say it. People can't help themselves. I suppose that's what you learn about these things. Anyway, apparently...
Yeah, you know human beings better than that.
Yeah. So A Quiet Place Part 2 was another scary success story. They made more than half of their $296 million worldwide haul from North American audiences. It seems like people are into horrors at the moment in a big way. Candyman also bucked a recent trend by launching only in cinemas without a simultaneous release on streaming. Interesting. I think people maybe like the idea of a cinema now, especially now that they're starting to open up again and it's an outing and you go there with your popcorn and, you know, maybe that's part of the success here. And Paw Patrol, the movie, I know that you're a mom, so Lebang, you know about Paw Patrol. The movie Paw Patrol dropped down a place, making $6.6 million in its second weekend in a North American box office. Yeah.
Sure. Are we in the right careers here, hey? Should we be into filmmaking or what?
Clearly not. And then, you know, Banksy is that famous artist who, you know, does the urban art and, you know, wherever Banksy leaves something scrawled on a wall that sells for millions. Well, apparently fake Banksy art was sold through the website for £244,000. And it was sold by NFT, non-fungible token. And the auction ended after a man offered 90% more than his rival bidders. Banksy's team told the BBC, any Banksy NFT auctions are not affiliated with the artist in any shape or form. Because it turns out that this whole thing was a scam. So Snae, who got ripped off this morning for R2,500, thank your lucky stars that it's not £250,000. Can you imagine losing that on a work of art that you don't even get? You never received the art because it doesn't exist. So the Banksy people are really upset because they're like, well, we didn't put this art on auction. You shouldn't trust things on the internet, but it makes them look bad anyway, right?
And by the way, that's a next level scam, because I don't know if you know what NFTs are, but the NFTs are just like an image. Yeah. So it's a digital.
Ooh. Correct.
That's correct. Wild.
But art, I mean, that's a whole other world.
Who has that kind of money to spend on an NFT? If you have that kind of money to spend on an NFT, then you don't mind being scammed that much. You'll just get another one, is the point. It's just like, well, you know, I'm on my yacht, smoking my cigar, you know, watching shake their ass in a thong, and I'm on my phone buying a fake NFT. Yeah. I'll just get another one.
Yeah, right.
Although, having said that, I like that the person's, because it is tons out, buns out, by the way. So I did like the thong thing that you said there. But having said that, and I don't know what it's like in your lives, but for me, the people with the most money that I know are actually the people who would care. Mm. You know, they are the people where 10 Rand is still 10 Rand. It's us who pretend to have money where it's like, I need that. But the rich people are like, hey, $10 is still $10. I want my money back. Uh-huh. I'll come to your house for that.
Right. Yeah. Don't give thieves their money.
Yes.
Make sure you get that back. It's not theirs. Get it back. Get it. All right, so those are some of the headlines you need this morning. That's what you need to know. Bulelo has a funny question for us this morning, and I tried to apply my mind to this last night because I wanted to have an answer, you know, prepared. But have you ever met a black person called Gary? But like, it's not a, this is not a common black name. In fact, I don't know one black guy called Gary. There's Gary Coleman, who was the star of that show in the US. But I don't know if he was like, was he black or was he a person of color?
Yeah.
Because there's a, yeah. I don't know. Your question, it seems like a racist question if you don't know what Bulelo's talking about here. But there are some names that are just not very common in the black community, no matter where you are in the world. And I'm struggling to come up with one who's called Gary. That's a good example.
So, it caused a lot of contention yesterday in the office, just to be clear. I was talking to Dari, who works with us, you know, fantastic human. Right. Yes. And she said, because I was saying, you know, like, hey, what is the whitest name in the world? And she said, Gary. Dari was so ready. I've never met a black Gary. I then proceeded to text six of my black friends. Yeah. Black. None of that.
What? Black.
Person of color. No, because there's people of color and there's black people. All right. Let's not get offended tonight.
Yeah.
Anyway, all six of them came back to me. Like, and I'm talking dynamic people, man. Like, no, they.
A broad range.
Not one knew a Gary. Right. Not one, like in the family. Yeah. So Gary may very well be the whitest name in the world. So just so you know, if you're a black Gary and you're listening, give us a shout out.
Let us know. I think the whitest name in the world is like Susie.
Like
Susie, it just screams white. Susie,
but don't you know?
You can't even say Susan. Susie.
But
Susie.
You get a Susan.
But that's not Susan.
Yeah.
That's not Susan. If you know what I'm saying.
Okay, I see what
like
you're
Susie.
Saying.
Susan.
It's giving me Karen vibes.
Just
like
it.
I can already see the hairstyle. But
say it again.
And the shoes.
Say Susan again, as black as you can.
Susan.
That I can hear, yeah. But I can't
there's Susan.
I can't hear Susie. Because, also be because close to Susie is Susa. And nobody wants to be called that.
Wow.
No one wants to be called that.
It's not even 7 a.m., Gareth.
I know. Susa.
No.
It's not good.
No, Susie is close. That's close, like you have to have gone to St. Anne's and you have to have done... like a sabbatical on a yoga course. That is about as white as it gets.
I went to primary school with a white girl named Tandy. And like, she was like the talk of the town for the full 7 years I was in school with her.
Oh my God.
And like, I don't think that's a thing anymore. Like now it's like, oh, this is my friend Tandy. And it's like, okay, cool. This is my white friend Balisa. If you go to TikTok, and I'm glad because Heritage Day is coming up, I'd like to do a thing on this. Like, you'll see how many young teenage white chicks are out here like Sanbona Ninjani, Ikamamu Palesa. And I love that. I think that's where we should be going anyway. We shouldn't be stopping to celebrate that kind of thing anymore.
Well,
it's like,
it,
you know, Gareth,
to
we
be...
can nickname you
no,
Themba.
Listen, I remember I went public with the fact that if I've figured out the names of if I have six girls and six boys, which is highly unlikely, but I've already worked out what their names will be. This is not the kind of situation where the mother gets any say at all. And I remember saying on the show, must have been 12 years ago, you can dig up the tapes. I was like, yeah. Each of my kids is also getting a black name. And then, you know, some people were like, oh, you're trying too hard. Because that sounds like the sort of thing that a white liberal would do to just impress, you know, impress dumb people. Because it's like, oh, yeah. But I think it's good because I like to see... a little bit of where you're from in your name. You know, you can give people, you can give your kid, you can give them 12 names if you want to, each kid. And for me, it would be a part of like where they're from and it must describe something. And there's some beautiful names that I've often encountered and thought that's a name I would want to give to a kid of mine. So for me, it was part of it. Tracy says, I've never come across a white Mavis or Gladys. No, I had a grandmother called Mavis. So, That's a white name as well as it is black.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, can I, black people, let's quickly have a conversation. Can we stop with Innocentia and Primrose? Like, okay, we're not doing it anymore.
And Prishas.
I second that. I actually second that. I think it's time we just move out of that. But also, I think at the time where that became a thing, it wasn't out of choice. I don't know if we really had a choice or it was, you know, because of, you know, the environment at the time. Now, I think let's just push the envelope and really just get into naming our kids what we really want. And as Gareth is saying, the environment or where they're from, or the rich culture that we have, like, let's use that. I'm proud to say I'm the only child out of my parents who does not have a white name. I am Lebang, I am Umpile, I am Thulaganyo. That's it. My brothers are like Paul and Moses. And I sit there and I laugh at them every chance I can get.
You got a superiority complex because of that, I can tell. All right. We do have to break from the stupidity of all of these names. But Mbulelo, to your point, there are a few answers about this Gary situation. Somebody says Gary Clark Jr. is a very famous musician and he's black. He black. Yeah, somebody came up with another one, but I think there are probably, you know, there are exceptions to every rule. It doesn't mean that that the rule doesn't apply. And all these names honestly annoy the breath out of me, says Orapeleng. Nahana Innocentia ka 2021.
Innocentia, come on now.
Sindile says
Fortunate.
Oh. We need some white petunias. Yeah, that's a good one. All right.
They probably are there, but they're mad old.
Yeah, also the other problem with even having these discussions these days is that the PC people get involved and they're like, you shouldn't even be talking about this. Well, if you're going to complain about any of that on this show, you're in the wrong place because we don't care.
And also to you PC people, you shouldn't be talking to me. Get the hell out of my face immediately.
That's
what I'm saying as they say that, right. Gareth. I'm totally with you.
Let's turn our attention to Sean Sanders. We mentioned NFTs, among other things, during the discussion around the Banksy art. And NFTs have been a very big subject of conversation in the world of cryptocurrency. But we're going to talk to Sean generally, and then we'll get into some specifics just now. He is the co-founder of Revix.com. Hey, Sean, how's it going, dude?
Morning, Gareth. Morning, guys. Yeah, good. How are you doing?
Awesome. Very good. Not a bad week in cryptocurrency. Some exciting developments. And as usual, certain altcoins running ahead and becoming some very nice 10x returns for some of the people who hold them, right? There's some exciting stuff going down.
No, there is. Solana, which is, you know, we're talking about weird names. I think Solana will be a new name on the show as well. But Solana's up 220% over the last month. And another Ethereum killer, and I'll talk about what Ethereum killer would be in just a moment. Cardano, which we launched last week, is up 103% over the last 30 days. So it has been, it's been a good time in crypto. I mean, Bitcoin's hovering around that 48,000 mark. I think it's about $47,200 right now. I mean, it broke above $50,000 this last week. So, I mean, it's very bullish in the crypto space. And if we're looking at these Ethereum killers, because, you know, you talk about Cardano, you talk about Solana. These are the cryptocurrencies that are found in our smart contract bundle. So just a bit of reference here, our smart contract bundle essentially gives you exposure to these Ethereum killers. It's cryptocurrencies that provide the blockchain infrastructure that you can then have NFTs that sit on top of, or applications and all the rest. And the reason why these are actually doing so well at the moment is that Ethereum sucks, to be honest. I mean, I sent a transaction yesterday to a smart contract on Ethereum, which sounds fancy. It's not. It's really just a case of, you know, I click buy something using a decentralized app on the Ethereum network. Again, some more jargon. But it cost me 350 Rand just to click buy. That's before any transactions actually occurred or whatever.
Wow.
And it's that, it's because Ethereum is so expensive to use. And I mean, using some of these decentralized apps right now isn't actually that difficult. So if you want to go out and maybe try use Uniswap or Aave or one of these other decentralized applications that exist, they really aren't too complicated. But what you'll see, and what I was kind of blown back by, is just how expensive Ethereum is and how slow Ethereum is right now as a result. So it becomes practically impossible to do much on it. And these Ethereum killers are kind of stepping up, and, you know, because Ethereum is, I suppose, becoming a victim of its own success, these other platforms are stepping up and now becoming real contenders.
Right.
And hence why you've seen a lot of investor funds run into these other sort of top tier smart contract cryptocurrencies.
Well, that's exciting stuff, because it means that there's still huge scope for people to make, like, overnight big money. But I like the idea that these are in your smart contract bundle and that you can have a much more long-term and much more sage approach to the whole thing. So I'm glad to hear that they're also represented in products that Revix offers. So you don't have to take a dangerous gamble yourself. You can rather take a calculated risk and buy yourself a piece of the action without having to go all in on some strange new coin that nobody knows about. Because, you know, the next one could be like the Dogecoin, for example.
Exactly. I think that's, you know, that's been our approach since we've come on the show, since we launched Revix. But this idea of going out and finding this next big hit crypto, I mean, this last month it was Solana. The month before that, there was Polkadot. Yep. Then you've got Cardano doing really well. I mean, you just can't keep up with the market. And I mean, yeah, we're talking about weird names, right? I mean, these are all weird and wonderful names.
Yeah.
But you can't keep up with how the space is developing.
How's that porn coin doing that we spoke about a while ago? Have you been watching that one and how it's been received?
No, I haven't actually been watching that cryptocurrency. I think it clearly hasn't been doing too well. But most cryptos actually can just be used for payment purposes, right? So, yeah. I mean, there's no real need for a porn coin.
Yeah, but I mean, you're watching what's happening in the trends anyway. So if it was doing well, it would have come up in your radar at some point, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I suppose, I mean, I don't deny or accept that. I mean, talking about porn coin, it depends, I suppose, what you'd actually use it for. If you're using it for payment purposes, it's like, why wouldn't you just use like Litecoin or Bitcoin or something like that?
I'll tell you why, Sean. I'll tell you why. I'm sharing my financial profile with my wife or my girlfriend. They get a little nosy. I need to have that one on a separate profile so we don't have to have an awkward conversation. That's actually what's happening there.
Yeah, your mistake.
Yeah, I like that.
Your mistake there is that you shouldn't really share your financial portfolio with anyone. All you should do is leave a little black book somewhere with your passwords in it and let someone discover long after you're dead that you had a couple of R1,000 stashed away in crypto somewhere, and it's turned out that it was quite a good investment. A friend of mine, Sean, found a cryptocurrency investment that he'd made, I don't know, 8 years ago in a little bit of Ethereum. And he cashed it out the other day because he needs to do renovations on his house. And it was quite a nice little windfall, you know, something he didn't expect. So there's still people discovering little investments they made years ago and forgot about.
Exactly. But the weird thing is, you know, some people have just discovered these investments or found them or completely forgot about them and whatever. Other people, and I mean, we had a customer recently that he kind of inherited this, I suppose, from his grandfather, but it was exactly that, a little black book saying, listen, I've got a Trezor wallet, which is one of those little USB devices that you can access. Yeah. Here's the private key to get access to it. And this guy got access to $2.8 million. And he essentially came to our platform saying, listen, we would like to, my wife and myself would like to liquidate this. And we naturally went through the KYC process, and now he's got that money. But it's so weird because that return that this individual's got, which was obviously absolutely insane because this was, you know, a couple of Bitcoin back in the day, probably not worth all that much. I mean, these were pretty old Bitcoin as well. They're obviously worth an insane amount of money today. Sure. And it's that approach of just saying, like, listen, look over the long term, look at what this guy's walking away with. And that's the investment opportunity here. Again, like what we've said before, Bitcoin, you know, if this goes to $100,000, which is roughly, you know, 2.1x from where it is today, that's cool. I mean, great. You've got a good return. It's a pretty high risk investment for that. The opportunity here is that this goes to $1 million, that this really becomes something that's far bigger than gold and becomes a reserve currency of the world. And if you start looking at
I don't mean to interrupt you, but there are lots of people out there who are still very skeptical about all of this. There was a guy who spoke about how he doesn't believe in any cryptocurrency. He says it's a huge bubble and it's going to burst. He's also one of the guys who predicted the 2008 the property crash in the US. Do you take guys like that very seriously? I mean, you have to pay attention to them. He's not a moron, but you can't really listen to everybody because everyone has an opinion too. How do you decide who to listen to?
I don't think you can listen to, as you said, like anyone in the space, you can't listen to them, but you should be cognizant of what they're saying. So you can't go and say, listen, I'm going to assume your opinion. I mean, he is taking a punt at a position on crypto as an asset class, just like we're taking a punt on a position of Revix and its success as an asset class. Is somebody blowing their nose?
Yeah, it's Gareth, because he might have COVID and it's COVID. Tragic thoughts and prayers. Autumn phrase.
I'm curious because you hear these people and they suddenly pop out of the woodwork and they're like, oh, I wouldn't waste any money on cryptocurrency. Oh, stupid, you know?
Yeah, I'll tell you, but I mean, they say that about stocks. Remember, there's always a stock market that's crashing or that's just about to crash. Yeah. And I say that about every asset class, right? And I think crypto is more divisive, right? Because it's new, it's novel, there's a lot of hype around it. And, you know, I always just say to people, like, take a step back. Like, if you don't even want to look at crypto as this investment class, rather just take a step back and just look at the returns. Look at the long-term returns that exist. And you don't have to put a ton of money into the space either. But not to get involved in something that's growing this quickly, that seems too emotional. And you don't obviously want to get emotions involved when it comes to investing. So take a small position. You know, if it is something that's out of your comfort zone, or if you, you know, if you disagree with crypto, then don't invest. But then, you know, be ready to, I think, sit back like a lot of people are sitting today and be like, shit, I wish I'd got involved 5 years ago or 7 years ago.
So MB says ADA, that's Cardano, right?
That's Cardano.
Okay.
And, then, and Cardano's been on an absolute tear.
Okay. Maybe you can also address this question. If Ethereum sucks, and I don't know that that's exactly what you said, but Ethereum may have there may be alternative ways of building on that blockchain technology and creating apps on that that blockchain. There are better ways and there are faster ways and there are different ways to Ethereum. But David's question is, if Ethereum sucks, why is it still pushing out the most transactions every day? It's easy to move on to a layer two solution on Optimism or Matic. Fees are reduced 10 times. What do you say to that, Sean? A very specific question.
Yeah, David, so I'm an Ethereum fanboy. Firstly, I want to see Ethereum succeed. And I think the layer two solutions do look really interesting. I mean, this is getting very technical. Yeah. But essentially, this is a way that you can scale the Ethereum blockchain without having any transactions occur exactly on the blockchain. Rather, you have little applications that sit on top of them, which sort of take the load off the network, sort of like building a motorway above the highway, if that's a way to describe it, or to sort of create an analogy. And I do think there's a lot of potential with that. The problem, though, is, you know, Ethereum's got the first mover advantage. These other layer two solutions do look promising, but the other layer one solutions, you know, looking, you know, potentially at the likes of Cardano, Solana, they seem to be doing everything on that layer one without having to have other applications built on the top of it. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes.
I like the way that our questions on this show are becoming much more specific. maybe you can address this one too. Robin, a very simple question, but something that I think a lot of people feel. Crypto is going to blow up. This is what Robin suggests. She thinks there's an inevitable future outcome. But I wish I had the money to invest. Now, you don't have to be a multimillionaire to invest in crypto. This is what we're trying to get people to understand. Right, Sean?
Exactly. You can get started with us for as little as 150 Rand right now.
Right.
And I mean, you can add a little bit on a monthly basis, and that's really how we believe you should be investing over the long term anyway. I think what's really important as well, just about considering crypto as an investable category, it's to say, listen, if you actually are, you know, battling financially, like, be cognizant of where you are financially. So that's step one. And then step two is, if you're in that position, you probably shouldn't go out and necessarily put your money in high risk investments. Like, crypto can go down 20%, just like it can go up 20%. Mm-hmm. So, you know, kind of just be aware of where you are. You don't want to go putting, you don't want to go out and put yourself at risk and all the rest.
All right, cool. So just to recap, there's a lot going on in crypto at the moment. Because Sean and the people at Revex are constantly rebalancing portfolios to get you the best exposure to the best performing cryptocurrencies, this is probably the safest place for you to start. Of course, any of this stuff is not financial advice, because we want to be clear that we're just exposing everybody who listens to this show to the opportunities that are available in the world of cryptocurrency. You don't have to jump in, but if you do, it doesn't have to be for a lot of money either. Go and check them out at revex.com. You can sign up for free. You just verify your ID. You add some funds, select the bundle of your choice, and watch it play. Run, go on the roller coaster. You'll have really, really exciting days where you think, this is the best thing I've ever done, and you'll have days where you go, oh my God, what am I doing? But if you don't join in, you'll never have either of those feelings. And what's the point of feeling nothing? I think that's a good sales. That's a good sales.
The last point from my side, though, guys, is we have Polkadot launching this Friday. So Polkadot essentially is a cryptocurrency that connects all the cryptocurrencies. So the crypto party is like a whole bunch of guys that think they're too smart for one another at the moment, right? So Ethereum's blockchain doesn't talk to Bitcoin's blockchain. You want to send an Ethereum token to the Bitcoin network, you can't do that. Polkadot makes that happen. So this is a really interesting cryptocurrency with some real-world use cases. So if you want to get involved with Polkadot, you can sign up for an account. And on Friday, for 1 week, you're completely fee-free with us. So another promotion that we're running there. Yeah, great. And that's news. You don't have to sign up with any promo code. You can literally just buy it on our platform and you won't be paying any fees.
Fantastic. They're always innovating over at Revix too. It's one of the reasons we like catching up with Sean. Thanks so much, dude. We'll speak to you next week.
Brilliant. Awesome, guys. Awesome. Have a good one.
That's Sean Sanders, and it is 7 o'clock. CliffCentral.com.